Okay. All right, we're going to get started.
Oh, okay.
If we can, since it's 8:30.
Still?
We're on page 85. Mike covered 10 last week, and I guess I'll cover 11 this week. I'd like to begin by asking my higher power to put the words in my mouth that would love in my heart and help me speak the truth. And I guess I just wanted to touch upon one thing with 10. It's interesting how none of this is original. And I've already given credit 3 times, so now it's officially mine. But you have the sort of left page of step 10 on page 84 where it talks about basically steps 4 through 9 on a moment-by-moment basis. As soon as we're disturbed, as soon as our peace of mind is disturbed as we go through the day. And then we have the page 85 part of step 10, which is a little bit below the middle of the page. It says, every day is a day when I must carry the vision of God's will into all of my activities. How can I best serve thee? Thy will, not mine, be done. These are thoughts which must go with me constantly. For me, if I'm living that part of step 10, the right page of that little, you know, those couple sentences there, then on the left page, when I look for selfishness, dishonesty, resentment, and fear, I'm not going to find any. So although this 4 through 9 part of step 10 is very important when we fall short, the right side of step 10 is, for me, more important, because if I'm living those few sentences constantly as I go through all of my activities, then again, when I look for the 4 through 9 part of step 10, I'm not going to find anything. So for me, the right side is more important than the left side. But when we fall short, we have that 4 through 9 on a quick basis to get us back on the beam. So I just wanted to start there because like Mike said last week, this right side of step 10 is one of the most incredible parts of the book to meditate on and to try to carry out in all of our affairs. And again, when we fall short on that ideal, then we've got the 4 through 9 to pick up on it. Step 11 starts on the bottom of page 85. Step 11 suggests prayer and meditation. I shouldn't be shy on this matter of prayer. Better men or women than I are using it constantly. It works if, one, I have the proper attitude, and, two, work at it. So there's a little bit of a formula there. I have to have the proper attitude. I'd like to suggest the proper attitude is, instead of being self-centered, we need to be God or love-centered, and then work at it. So there's a little bit of a formula there for it to work. It would be easy to be vague about this matter, yet we believe we can make some definite and valuable suggestions. Now it's going to get into an evening review. What's interesting about this evening review is that it's part of step 11. 95% of the whole fellowship says that you do evening review as part of step 10. But as we saw last week in step 10, it says we do step 10 as we go along, which means moment by moment through the day. If we wait until the end of the day to do a review, our day can snowball on us. And, if I start my day in traffic and people cutting me off and having a bad attitude, then when I get to work and people start giving me work that was due yesterday, then when I get home, I kick the dog and I get back into traffic, then my day has snowballed. And if I can, as soon as I see that my peace of mind has been disturbed, if I could stop at that moment and step back and deal again with the 4 through 9 aspect of step 10, then I can get back on the beam and get on with my day instead of waiting until the end of the day. And now 12 hours have just been ripped away from my peace of mind. I don't really care if you call the evening review step 10 or step 11. The important thing is that you're doing it. But I'd like to point out that in the book it says that as part of step 11 we constructively review our day, which is the next sentence. When I retire at night, I constructively review my day. Also, I think probably the biggest reason why people consider step 10 to be part of, you know, to be only basically an evening review is because in the 12 and 12, it mentions many different inventories. It even mentions the spot check inventory or the moment-by-moment inventory like three or four times. But it also includes an evening kind of an inventory. It also includes a bi-yearly or a like a six-month inventory. It includes a year inventory. And the Step 10 essay closes with an evening in, inventory. So perhaps that's where that comes from. But it also does mention three or four times like a spot check inventory. So it does it does correspond with what the big book says, that the 10th step really is moment by moment throughout the day. And this is when we retire at night. This is the self-examination aspect of step 11. When I retire at night, I constructively review my day, not destructively. I don't beat myself up over ways that I've fallen short, but I constructively review my day. So I try to matter-of-factly, as unemotionally involved as possible, just kind of review my day and see how I did. And it gives us some specific questions here. Some people refer to them as the 12 questions. I guess if you broke it down to its most minute way, it ends up being 12 questions, but what I see is about 7 or 8 questions, some of which have a few different parts associated with it. It says, was I resentful, selfish, dishonest, or afraid? Like Mike said last week, in association with step 10, that's sort of the four-step aspect of the 11-step evening review. It says, do we owe an apology? There's steps 8 and 9 sort of in different words. Have I kept something to myself that should be discussed with another person at once? And notice that it says at once. Sometimes in doing an evening review, we might have to call somebody just to talk it over with them. Maybe they can see more truth than we will. Maybe they'll catch an aspect of our ego that maybe we didn't notice. And that's the fifth step aspect of this evening review in step 11. Was I kind and loving toward all? That's sort of alluding to step 12. Practicing the principles in all of our affairs. What could I have done better? For me, that sentence captures the essence of spiritual growth. What could I have done better? I could have had the most perfect day and did absolutely nothing wrong. I'll be honest with you, in doing evening reviews for 7.5 years, there was one day that I did an evening review and I couldn't find anything that I did wrong. And what's interesting was that it was just an average day. There wasn't anything exemplary about that day, but for some reason I did an evening review, and then I kind of said, that's kind of strange. To be honest with you, I didn't run into very many people that day. I kind of spent it by myself, and I even like kind of stopped and said, wait a minute, I just reviewed my day, and wait a minute, there's got to be something, you know what I mean? And I kind of tried to bring God even more into it, because when I do an evening review, I kind of do asking God to help me review the day. I don't just review it from my eyes. I try to review it from my higher power's eyes. And nothing came up. And that's only happened once in 7.5 years. As far as I'm concerned, it's a fluke. But, for me, the essence of spiritual growth is right there. I could have had the most perfect, absolutely ultimate day, but that sentence captures spiritual growth. What could I have done better? There might have been one other person that I could have called, or one person that I saw across the street and kind of didn't respond to, perhaps going over and seeing if they were okay or something. Maybe saw somebody from a distance that didn't go over to them. There's something, for a period of time during that day, I wasn't including God. That's something I could have done better. For me, that's the essence of spiritual growth, is what could I have done better? Now, as I go through this, you'll notice in the packet, there's sort of a way that this evening review can be done very formally. Some people prefer to do writing. Journaling is a very transforming tool, and some choose to do this in their head. But something that I suggest to people that I work with is that, like Mike pointed out last week, the beginning of the 10th step says that we commence this way of living, which for me is the 10th and 11th step way of living, as we cleaned up the past. So we saw some time frames before, and now we're seeing another one in step 10, that we practice this way of life as we clean up the past. As we start making amends, we also include step 10 and 11 in our daily repertoire. And again, this is a tool that can be used in a formal way to actually, sit down and fill out these questions in a specific way. Was I thinking of myself most of the time? Or was I thinking of what I could do for others, of what I could pack into the stream of life? But I must be careful not to drift into worry, remorse, or morbid reflection. And again, at the beginning of that paragraph, it says that we constructively review our day. So now he's repeating himself. So it must be pretty important for, in a couple sentences, he repeats himself twice. We don't do this in a way to beat ourselves up. If we do something wrong, we don't beat ourselves up later on for doing something wrong, because now we're doing a second thing wrong based on that, you know, around that one thing. That we don't beat ourselves up. We see where we've fallen short. We learn from it and we move on. If we use something that disturbed our peace in the past to disturb our peace in the present, the ego is still winning. We're still perhaps falling short on maintaining peace of mind. So he says it here twice. We constructively review our day, and now we're careful not to drift into worry, remorse, or morbid reflection. And it's telling us why, because that would diminish my usefulness to others. Again, the book, again and again and again and again. Around that sentence, I have 9 references that basically say the same thing. We need to be of service to other people, to God and to other people. After making my review, I ask God's forgiveness and inquire what corrective measures should be taken. And that's another way of saying step 6 and 7. So right there in that paragraph, as we do our evening review, we again do the process of steps 4 through 9. We didn't intend moment by moment as we go through the day, and we're doing it again as part of our evening review, with a couple of other things thrown in as well. And in the original manuscript, the next sentence as part of that same paragraph that we just read said, thus you keep clean as you live each day. So it's kind of interesting that they took that out. And again, of course, you know, after we do our review, we ask God's forgiveness and inquire what corrective measures should be taken. That's a prayer. We're asking God for forgiveness and inquire what corrective measures should be taken. Sometimes that question is answered when we say, what could we have done better? But, you know, here we're officially asking God, okay, God, I've fallen short. You know, I try to reach my highest power, and how can I make up for what's happened? Or what perhaps tomorrow can I do better so it doesn't happen again? You know, as far as I'm concerned, you know, Mike had touched upon it last week, that it doesn't say if we fall short. It says when these crop up, we take corrective action. We're going to fall short. We're human. We're going to fall short. But we have a way to deal with that. And, you know, 4 through 9, moment by moment, and, you know, again, as we review our day. And now it's going to tell us about some meditation. On awakening, it doesn't say after we've showered and eaten and gotten dressed and we're on our way to work. It doesn't say at some point in the morning. It says on awakening. Something that I do is before I get out of bed, the moment that I realize that I'm awake and I'm not going to fight going back to sleep, because, you know, sometimes you wake up and it's before your alarm or whatever and you're kind of not up yet, I say the third step prayer immediately. My first thoughts try to be of God, because I'm immediately, first of all, showing my higher power that it's a priority, but more importantly, I'm trying to fill myself with this positive, wonderful prayer called the third step. I then normally get up, I'll pee, and I wash my mouth out. I go over to my sofa, I sit down, and I start to pray and meditate. Literally, within 5 minutes, I'm with God. And I haven't missed morning meditation in over a year. And, you know, Mike had touched upon it last week, that we're both very similar with some of our practices and also some of our previous experiences, in that we had experience in the past of only practicing this not on a regular basis. We had glimpses of practicing this, but not doing it on a constant basis. And in the last, a year or maybe a little bit more, we've really, pretty much separately, really came into practicing this and making it a priority and doing it every day. And I can only speak for myself, but I've seen the growth in him, and I've experienced the growth within myself, that this is really incredible when it's done on a priority basis every day. It's just incredible. It's a life-changing process. It says, upon awakening, let us think about the 24 hours ahead. You know, that's the essence of one day at a time. That's also the essence of living in the moment. We don't think about the past. We don't think necessarily about yesterday. Although we can include part of our evening review, we can perhaps bring into our morning meditation, because if we've been shown some corrective measure, we now need to implement that into the next 24 hours. Another thing that you might notice is that if you turn back to page 84, it talks about entering the world of the spirit. The world of the spirit is only here and now. The world of the spirit has no time. It's only in the moment. The world of the spirit is not in the past, and the world of the spirit is not in the future. Just like conscious contact with a higher power, it could have happened in the past, but I can't right now have conscious contact with a higher power that I had a week ago. And I can't have it in thinking about, you know, the future. I need to be in the moment. And you'll notice after it says that entering the world of the spirit, it talks about watching for resentment, or selfishness, dishonesty, resentment, and fear right now, here and now. It says, when these crop up, we at once, which is right now, ask God to remove them. We don't ask Him to at once remove them. We at once ask God to remove them. I can't tell God when to do anything. And then it says, we discuss them with someone immediately, which is right now, and make amends quickly, which is as soon as possible, you know, right now, as soon as possible. And then we resolutely turn our thoughts right now to someone we can help. So the world of the spirit and the spiritual way of life is in the moment, right here, right now, experiencing peace of mind, doing what the right thing right now needs to be. For me, that was a really important thing that I stole from somebody to pass along to other people. That, again, the world of the spirit is here and now. There's no, you know, I'm going to make amends 3 weeks from now. It's saying quickly, now, immediately. You know what I mean? It's here and now. If I'm missing an opportunity to do something now that perhaps my inner guide is prompting me to do, I'm missing that opportunity. I'm moving past the time when it should be perhaps done. And don't get me wrong, sometimes, you know, that doesn't mean that if I have to go to work today, I'm supposed to get on a plane and go talk to somebody. You know, we need to be responsible and reasonable, and maybe even talk to people about what kind of guidance we're getting. But again, the world of the spirit is now, in the moment, doing what's the next right thing now. Well, I really went off there. It says, we consider our plans for the day. This day, today. Before I begin, I ask God to direct my thinking, especially asking that it be divorced from self-pity, dishonesty, or self-seeking motives. That's a prayer. We're asking God to direct our thinking, and especially asking Him that it be divorced from self-pity, dishonesty, or self-seeking motives. My pager just started dancing. Under these conditions, the conditions of asking God to direct our thinking and to be divorced from self-pity, dishonest, or self-seeking motives, I can employ my mental faculties with assurance, for after all, God gave us brains to use. My thought life, when I'm being divorced from self-pity, dishonesty, and self-seeking motives, will be placed on a much higher plane when our thinking is cleared of wrong motives. Notice in that paragraph all the inner stuff that it's pointing to. It's talking about considering our plans for the day. That's something that's on the inside. It's part of our thinking, and perhaps bringing God into it. It's asking God to direct my thinking, again, an inner thing. It's asking that we be divorced from self-pity, dishonesty, or self-seeking motives. Again, all stuff that's inside of us. It's talking about mental faculties. It's talking about brains. It's talking about our thought life being placed on a much higher plane when our thinking is clear of wrong motives. All inner stuff. You know, I don't think it's a coincidence that the fourth step talks about a moral inventory, and the tenth step talks about a personal inventory. That a moral inventory is just sort of a general relationship conduct kind of an inventory, and a personal inventory is just focusing on me. After we did the fourth step and shared the fifth step, we realized that the people and everything outside of us isn't the problem anymore. I'm the problem, either because of something that I'm doing or because of the way that I'm thinking towards something that's going on outside of me. That's why I'm going to use the meditation from the 12 and 12, which basically points to that, and that's this line. It says, it's a spiritual axiom that every time we are disturbed, no matter what the cause, there is something wrong with us. And then it continues to say, if somebody hurts us and we are sore, we are in the wrong also. Because people are going to fall short, and like we saw in the fourth step, perhaps they were spiritually blocked off, because that's the only time that anybody, including myself, harms somebody. That they, like myself, when I'm harming somebody, I'm spiritually blocked off. Just like if you harm me, you're spiritually blocked off. But I can have a better attitude toward that person. Perhaps they've harmed me, but I can see that they're just spiritually blocked off. I can still have love toward them anyway. So it's talking here about our thought life being placed on a much higher plane when our thinking is clear of wrong motives. That it talks about in step four that when the spiritual malady is overcome, we straighten out mentally and physically. That for me, there's a deeper level than just my thinking. The deeper level for me is my motives. That if I have loving motives, if I have loving and unselfish motives, my thinking is going to be in a certain direction, and therefore my actions are going to be in a certain direction. But if my motives are selfish and perhaps fearful, then my thinking is going to be in a different direction, perhaps the exact opposite direction, and my actions are going to be in that same direction. So for me, there's a deeper level than just our thinking. Our motives direct our thinking, and our thinking directs our actions. So that's why the program gets into what's our motives, what's going on deep down within, spiritually, and then our thinking is going to be different, and then our actions are going to be different. And this points to it again. In thinking about my day, I may face indecision. I may not be able to determine which course to take. Here I ask God for inspiration and intuitive thought or decision. Again, all inside stuff. I'm facing indecision. I can't determine which course to take. I'm looking to my higher power for inspiration, intuitive thought, or a decision. And then it's followed by something that's very important. I relax and take it easy. I don't struggle. In the original manuscript, the next line said, ask God's help. The book continues. We are often continues with some promises. Again, it's asking there to ask God for inspiration, intuitive thought, or a decision. That's another prayer. So it's saying in the paragraph before this that we consider our day. Now it's saying in considering our day, as long as I'm cleared from wrong motives in considering my day and asking God to direct my thinking, I might still be facing indecision. You know, should I talk to my boss about getting a raise? Sometimes that answer may not come very clearly. So I ask my higher power, which course should I take? You know, sometimes something that's kind of interesting is that rarely does a lightning bolt come down and hit somebody and say, yes, today is the day. Sometimes if I feel like my inner voice is prompting me to do something, I don't necessarily assume that's my higher power talking to me. Something that I'll do perhaps is talk it over with somebody else, because I mean, there have been people all over the world that said that God was telling them to do something, and you know, it was obvious well after the fact or soon after the fact that, you know, I don't think that God was telling these people to drink Kool-Aid and kill everybody that's around you. I mean, I'd like to question that and suggest that perhaps wasn't. Maybe I shouldn't question it. I mean, I don't know why. I don't know what the plan is. But, you know, if I was to go to you and say, God just told me to give Kool-Aid to everybody and kill them, I'm sure that you would see that a little bit differently than the way I'm seeing it. I would hope. Please, if that happens. No, I'm just kidding. Only you. Everybody else go with it, but you. Something that I try to do in something that I think is guidance, and I've already passed it along to somebody else and they think that maybe it's a good idea, is as I'm approaching doing what I'm about to do, is I'll say to my higher power, you know, if this is not what you want me to do, please, you know, give me a sign or just, you know, just let me know. Let me know strongly that this is not the right thing to do, because I think I'm following your will, and if this is your will, you know, I'll go forward with it. But you know, there have been times where, you know, I thought that I needed to say something to somebody, and that whole entire day I couldn't get a hold of them. I called them, I went to their place, they weren't there. It started becoming real obvious as that day went along that maybe this wasn't the time to tell them. Whether it was a risky kind of a situation or not, I'm trying to get a hold of a person, I'm not able to. For me, that's sort of a sign. Now, I shouldn't necessarily, you know, avoid now not seeing them. Maybe the next day is the right time, but, you know, I ask my higher power to kind of, you know, give me a sign or make it obvious to me that this is not the right thing to do, because I'm going to be doing this and I think this is what you want me to do. And sometimes I do. It does get obvious that maybe this isn't the right moment. And then it goes on to say, you know, again, for me it's kind of important that, you know, I ask my higher power to inspire me you know, in indecision, which direction should I go in? And then I let go. I don't try to force the issue. I don't try to figure it out on my own. I try to ask my higher power, you know, give me some inspiration, intuitive thought. Sometimes I'm at a meeting and I hear something that's said by somebody, and that what was said was a direct message to me because of something that I was struggling with at the time. I can't tell you how many times that's happened. So, you know, in facing a decision, I'm not sure which way to go. Maybe I can talk about it with somebody else, because very often people, God talks through people. But I don't necessarily try to figure it out anymore. I just see, you know, how my inspiration goes and see how, you know, it just ends up going. Sometimes me not doing anything is the right thing to do. But it's saying here that, you know, I try to leave it in God's hands and not figure it out on my own. We are often surprised how the right answers come after we have tried this for a while. So, you know, what, and it continues, what used to be the hunch or the occasional inspiration gradually becomes a working part of the mind. Being still inexperienced and having just made conscious contact with God, it is not probable that we are going to be inspired at all times. We might pay for this presumption in all sorts of absurd actions and ideas. Nevertheless, we find that our thinking will, as time passes, be more and more on the plane of inspiration we come to rely upon it. Just that last part that I read, a hunch, occasional inspiration, and it's, the end of that sentence says the mind, conscious contact with God, inspired. Two lines later, it talks about ideas, it talks about thinking, it talks about inspiration. Again, all inside stuff. It's amazing how much in 10 and 11 it's talking about our inner life. And even just before, it talked about our thought life being placed on a higher plane. And that's kind of the little piece on meditation. Now it's going to talk about prayer. I usually conclude the period of meditation, the period of medication and prayer, that I be shown all through the day what my next step is to be, that I be given whatever I need to take care of such problems. I ask especially for freedom from self-will. Again, he said that earlier. I ask especially for freedom from self-will and are careful to make no requests for myself only. I may ask for myself, however, if others will be helped. I am careful never to pray for my own selfish ends. Many of us have wasted a lot of time doing that, and it doesn't work. You can easily see why. The 11th step talks about praying only for through prayer and medication to improve my conscious contact with God, asking only for His will for us and the power to carry it out. I've seen in other spiritual literature, I know the Bible is one of them, that it says to pray for specific things and to ask God for specific things. I personally have gotten away from that as a result of language like this, and because of a speaker that's influenced me and Mike, in that I don't know what's best for me. I don't assume to know what's best for me. Some of the things that I thought were best for me almost killed me. And some of the things that I didn't think were as best for me, and that I would even like to suggest was a bad thing that happened to me as I was going through my life, ended up being the exact thing that got me to grow spiritually the most. So I don't know what's best for me. You know, me assuming that I do, this person would refer to as a form of agnosticism. If I'm telling God what I want or what I think is best, I'm not letting God be God. I don't know what's best for me, so I'd rather just leave that in God's hands, and I'd rather just ask for what is your will in my life, Lord. That's what I want to do, because I don't know what's best for me. A really cool story around all that is, I got it from Anthony DeMello originally, but I've seen it in a couple different places now, so I'm not sure really where it's from. It seems that some spiritual masters kind of have taken it on as their own, but I'm sure they got it from somewhere else, because I've seen it in a few different places. And it was something I sent out of my email list a few weeks ago. There was a spiritual man that lived on a mountain, and just below him, there was a farmer. And the farmer really didn't like the spiritual guy, because he kind of felt that the spiritual guy was a slacker. Because all he did was sit around and meditate and teach. And, you know, the farmer thought that you know, raising crops or growing crops and raising cattle was a whole lot more important than sitting around not doing much of anything. And one day, the farmer's cows broke through the fence, and they all disappeared. And he had a whole lot of cows. As a matter of fact, his herd of cow, if that's what they're called, was the main part of his income. And now that was all just now gone. And he was really distraught. And he went up to see the spiritual guy, and he said, you know, teacher, my cows have broken through the fence, and they're all gone. This is a terrible thing. Why would God do this to me? You know, this is a really bad thing. Would you agree that this is really bad? And the spiritual guy looks at him and says, you know, good or bad, I really don't know. And, you know, the farmer kind of curses under his breath and goes back down to his farm. And a couple days later, a very large group of wild horses come through the hole that the cows had broken through, and now they're on his land, and he quickly closes up the fence. And horses are a whole lot better than cows, and there were a whole lot of them. And the farmer is just totally ecstatic, and he goes up to see the spiritual guy and says, you know, something wonderful has happened. You know, a whole large amount of horses have come onto my farm now where the hole was, where the cows were, and where the cows got out. And this is really wonderful. It's really great. Horses are so much better than cows. Isn't this a good thing? And the spiritual guy looks at him and says, you know, good or bad, I really don't know. And again, he shakes his head and goes back down to his farm. And a couple days later, the farmer's son was riding one of the horses so he could break him. And the horse throws him off his back, and he lands on his leg and breaks his leg, and he's going through a lot of pain, and the farmer's all distraught again, and he goes up to see the spiritual guy, and he says, something terrible has happened. My son is in a lot of pain, and, you know, he's broken his leg, and this is terrible. You know, this is a bad thing. Can't you agree that this is a bad thing? And the spiritual guy looks at him and says, you know, good or bad, I really don't know. And he goes back down, vowing never to go see the spiritual guy again. And a couple days later, war breaks out, and soldiers come through, trying to get young men to join the army so they can go to war, and because his son has a broken leg, they don't take him to battle. And the farmer is just ecstatic, and he goes to see the spiritual guy and says, something wonderful has happened. They didn't take my son to battle because his leg was broken. Isn't this a good thing? And the spiritual guy looks at him and says, you know, good or bad, I really don't know. That, you know, there were many things in my life that I thought were what I thought was best in my life that really ended up being not so good, and there were many things in my life that I thought were terrible. You know, breakup of marriages and pain and bewilderment and people screwing me and saying things about me. And, you know, it ended up being the period in my life where the most amount of spiritual growth occurred, because it created a situation where I was perhaps alone, and I sought my higher power in a much stronger way. So, you know, for me, good or bad, I just really don't know. And, you know, I've gotten away from, I sometimes do it, but I try to get away from, you know, labeling of good or bad. I sometimes have some criticisms over things that have happened. As a matter of fact, today was a good example of it. But, you know, in trying to seek a spiritual perspective on life and leaving it in God's hands, I need to get away from deciding what's good or bad in my life. I really just don't know. And that's why I've gotten away from requesting specific things from my higher power. I just ask for His will and have the power to carry it out when I know what it is to do. And then it goes on, if circumstances warrant, we ask our wives or friends to join us in morning meditation. If we belong to a religious denomination which requires a definite morning devotion, we attend to that also. If not members of religious bodies, we sometimes select and memorize a few set prayers which emphasize the principles we have been discussing. And, you know, we've outlined prayers through this whole thing. You know, third step prayer, seventh step prayer, all kinds of prayers, even today. There's a list in your packet that lists all the prayers in the big book, or at least all the ones I've found. You know, the Serenity Prayer and the Prayer of St. Francis is in 12 and 12, as well as a whole lot of other short little one-line prayers. So it's saying to, you know, find prayers to help us as we go along. Suggestions about these may be obtained from one's priest, minister, or rabbi. Be quick to see where religious people are right. Make use of what they offer. You know, the wonderful thing about AA is that we don't assume that we're an end-all in regard to all of this. I know of no religion that says it's okay to seek what other religions say. Now, I'm not suggesting that AA is a religion. It certainly is a spiritual path or a spiritual way of life, let's call it. But I love the fact that it's saying here that see where you know, powerfully spiritual people are right. I mean, if some author touches your heart, maybe you've seen a couple lines. That's something that I try to do. And what I send out is that it's a splattering of all kinds of influences and all kinds of people. And people have contacted me and said, you know, this Anthony DeMello really touches my heart. Whenever you send out stuff of his, it really, you know, resonates to where I'd like to be. You know, can you suggest a book by that person? Or you know, what influenced you in the stuff that you sent out? Where was it from specifically? So something I've always tried to be is sort of a spiritual thief in taking from many different sources. And for me, that's sort of a conscious effort on my part, because when we get into working with others, which is the next chapter, as well as other chapters that talk about how to work with people, it talks about find out what you can about them, especially like their religious life and their background, and adopt yourself to them. So if somebody that I start working with is Jewish and I know nothing about Jewish spirituality or Jewish religious, I can't really help them in that area. But I need that I try to expose myself to many different sources and many different types of practices. And you know, for me, in working with somebody, I think it makes me a little bit more effective, because whatever they are, I can adapt myself to that, and I can influence them, or not influence them, but suggest powerful spiritual stuff which corresponds with what they already believe in going forward. So that's something that I've always tried to do, is pick and choose from many different sources. Make use of what they offer, it ends with there. Now here's an interesting little paragraph. As I go through the day, I pause when agitated or doubtful. In the original manuscript, it then said, and be still. And the book continues, and ask for the right thought or action. I constantly remind myself I am no longer running the show, humbly saying to myself many times each day that I will be done. It said that, and that's a little bit of a prayer, and it's also a third step reference. You know, humbly saying to myself, I will be done. That's sort of a third step reference. Again, a prayer. In the 10th step, it had a longer version of thy will be done. It said, thy will not mine be done. You know, those two or three lines there are incredibly powerful as a tool as we go through the day, moment by moment. You know, 10 kind of talks about moment by moment as we go through the day. 11, a couple times, has talked about as we go through the day what to do. But it also includes how to start the day and also includes how to end the day. So for me, in my mind, 10 and 11 are kind of together with a whole lot of stuff in there on what to do moment by moment throughout the day. And notice there it says when agitated or doubtful. First of all, agitated is that our emotion has disturbed our peace of mind, and doubtful is that our thinking has disturbed our peace of mind. And those are the only two areas that can disturb our peace of mind, either our emotions or our thinking. Also notice that agitated is well before pissed off and rageful, and doubtful is well before we're in deep crap, or we're in deep trouble. Excuse my language. It's crap the curse. Okay, deep shit. Now I'll say, excuse me.
There you go.
Okay. agitated or doubtful, as soon as we realize that our peace of mind has been disturbed, either emotionally or with our thinking, we try to step back, see what's really going on here, and get back on the beam. Well before we're downstream in the trouble, or downstream in not having peace of mind. And notice again, I wrote here underneath that part, I put that, you know, one of our slogans is keep coming back, and I really believe that that's what God wants, that we keep coming back to God. You know, God keeps saying to us, keep coming back. You know, keep tapping into that wisdom within you. Keep including God into all our affairs. Keep coming back. Keep resolutely turning our thoughts to someone we can help. You know, here and now, loving, unselfish, honest, here and now. It's a really cool thing, and it's a really cool twist on the slogan, which I also stole from somebody, but I've used it 3 times, so I don't have to give them credit. I'd like to suggest that nothing that me and Mike has said has been original, I'll be honest with you.
Speak for yourself.
All right, then let me hear you say it then. No, I'm just kidding. I can't speak for Mike, but nothing I have ever said. I mean, there might have been a couple things that were really inspired, but it's mostly influenced by lots of things that I've heard, pretty much. And that's a really cool one with the keep coming back. Because when you kind of look at that, you just think of it as a new person, but it can be also used as a person who's established in the program as, you know, keep coming back to your higher power, keep coming back to doing the right thing, keep coming back to being unselfish. Okay, now here are the 11-step promises. We are then in much less danger of excitement, fear, anger, worry, self-pity, or foolish decisions. We become much more efficient. We do not tire so easily, for we are not burning up energy foolishly as they did when we are trying to arrange life to suit ourselves. Again, it's referring back to the third step when, you know, we're no longer the actor trying to run the whole show. And we're not wasting time with all that thinking and all that activity trying to manipulate all the people around us. You know, like it said earlier in step 11, it says that we relax and take it easy and don't struggle, and that the right answer will come. I mean, everybody here has experienced that. Everybody in the world has experienced that. How many times did we go looking for our keys and couldn't find it? And then as soon as we stop thinking about it, we all of a sudden thought of it. I mean, everybody here has experienced that. That's the pure essence of what was just read there. We try to be driven by the inspiration instead of by the ego and the mind, which is very fearful and very dishonest and very self-seeking motivated. We try to do the opposite of that. And then the next line is the shortest paragraph in the entire book. It works, it really does. And the original manuscript, what came after that was, try it. So that's kind of neat. Then the next paragraph, we alcoholics are undisciplined, so I let God discipline me in the simple way we have just outlined. Again, this isn't self-help. We let God discipline us. We let that positive inspiration, that positive intuitive thought help us to move in the right direction. I don't know if I've said it here yet, but I like describing it as we have two dogs within us. It's sort of like the angel and the devil on our shoulder. It's the exact essence of that, that we have two dogs within us, the good dog and the bad dog, the good voice or the bad voice, the God, higher power, unselfish, loving, honest part of us, and the ego-driven, fearful, dishonest, selfish part of us. And there's this sort of internal war. And neither one of them ever dies. They're both there, and neither one of them ever dies. When I was totally evil, there was still a small part of me that was telling me not to do that. But it was quieter and quieter, and I didn't listen to it more and more. But now in trying to live a spiritual life, that voice has become stronger and stronger, and it's just a matter of whichever dog I feed, that's the one that's going to get stronger. But like I said, neither one of them ever dies. Whether I'm feeding the one or not, it's always going to be there. And, you know, we're human, so we're sometimes going to feed the bad dog, no matter how perfectly wonderful we are. So that's like, I love that mental picture of the two dogs, you know, that we can be motivated positively and we can be motivated negatively. Something that I've learned in the breakup of two marriages is that I am not my thinking and I am not my emotions. There were times in the breakup of the marriage that my emotions were completely painful and completely negative, let's call it. Yet I still didn't do anything. I didn't do anything or say anything that I regretted or needed to make amends for while I was going through that. My emotions in my mind doesn't have to drive me. My thinking can say, I called up one of my friends one time and I said, what the situation was that I moved out of the house. The next day, the boyfriend moved in, and now he's living in my house, and I'm still paying for the house, and he's living there now. And I called up my friend, and I was totally irate, and I was totally consumed with emotions and thoughts that weren't very nice. And I called up my friend, and I said, which should I do? Burn down the house when they're home, or burn down the house when they're not home? That was my best thinking. Now, I didn't do that. My friend even laughed at me, because he was like shocked that I would even think like that, hearing some of the things I say from a podium, you know what I mean? But that was what I was going through at the time, and I learned that whether I'm going through a lot of emotions and I feel like lashing out, it doesn't mean that I have to. I don't have to be driven by that. There's still that still small voice that wants me to do the right thing, and that can be driving me whether I feel like doing it or whether I want to do it. What I try to do is do the right thing, whether I feel like it or whether I want to or not. And there's been so much happiness that has come because of that. Because, like I said, I went through that emotional turmoil and that pain and that bewilderment and even times anger, and never said or did anything that I regretted through all of that. And I don't know about anybody else here, but that is a miracle. I am not capable of that. My last name is Lash. So lashing out and ripping somebody apart with my tongue, it was a way of life for me. I was really good at ripping people apart with my mouth. And today, it's just not an aspect of my life. And the few times that has happened, it's just minor. It doesn't control me anymore. And for me, that's one of the most wonderful promises that this program has offered me, and that this way of life has offered me, is that whether I feel like doing it or whether I want to do it, it doesn't matter. I can still do the next right thing. Well, I went off again. Okay, but this is not all. There is action and more action. Faith without works is dead. What works? And that was what it said in the original manuscript. What works? Faith. The next chapter is entirely devoted to step 12. Now, it's not saying that all of the information of step 12 can only be found in the next chapter. It's saying that the next chapter is only devoted to step 12. There's plenty of other parts of the book before and the chapters after this chapter that talk about working with other people, as well as practicing these principles in all of our affairs. So this is not the only chapter about step 12. The next chapters from here to the end of to page 164 are all about working with others, as well as practicing the principles in all of our affairs. Now, this is what it says in the 12 and 12 on page 98, and you can check it because we have one here, about when we touched upon in step 11, we touched upon self-examination, medication, and prayer. And this is what it says in the 12 and 12 about those three. It says, there is a direct linkage among self-examination, meditation, and prayer. Taken separately, now individually, taken separately, these practices can bring much relief and benefit. But when they are logically related and interwoven, so in other words, when they're done together, all three, on a daily basis, the result is an unshakable foundation for life. Now and then, we may be granted a glimpse of that ultimate reality, which is God's kingdom. And we will be comforted and assured that our own destiny in that realm will be secure for so long as we try, however faltingly, to find and do the will of our Creator. So it's saying here that individually, self-examination, meditation, and prayer are powerful tools individually, but when all three are interwoven, it's an unshakable foundation for life. And that's why Mike and I, next year, we're going to be doing a whole entire weekend up at the Wilson House in Vermont, which is where Bill Wilson was born. We're going to do a whole entire weekend on just Step 10 and 11. And we're calling it, self-examination, meditation, and prayer, an unshakable foundation for life. That's kind of the theme of the whole weekend, and that's where we got it from. So again, no original thoughts there. Now that's pretty much all of Step 11. It's almost 8:30. What I'd like to do... it's almost 8:30. Actually, that's right according to this doc. Something I wanted to touch upon. Mike had mentioned last week how much I love this How to Listen to God pamphlet. This pamphlet is the single most concentrated and spiritual piece of literature I have ever found. And I mean, these three pages or two, three pages or four pages, depending on what font you use, has as much in here as whole books that I've read or listened to on tape. It's probably closer to the truth. One of the things I especially love is it talks about when we ask for inspiration in the morning. If you remember when we did the meditation part of Step 11, it said we ask God to direct our thinking. So if we're asking God to direct our thinking, we need, and then ask it that it be removed from self-pity and self-seeking motives, we then need to be still and quiet and see what comes. And part of this technique in the How to Listen to God is that when inspiration starts coming, we write it down. So that then we won't forget it, and also we can share it with somebody else and see if perhaps this has been a guided or inspired thought. But in asking our higher power, if you turn to, I guess it's the second page of the How to Listen to God pamphlet, it also mentions that if you're doing that and nothing is coming, it suggests what the reason quite possibly could be. And if you notice number 9, it says blocks. It says, what if I don't get any definite thoughts? It says, God's guidance is as freely available as the air we breathe. If I am not receiving thoughts when I listen to God, the fault is not God's. Usually it is because there is something I will not do. And then it gives a list of things to consider. If these kind of things are happening in our life, that this is probably why we have our higher power blocked off and we're not receiving inspiration. It says, something wrong in my life that I will not face or make right. A habit or indulgence I will not give up. A person I will not forgive. A wrong relationship in my life that I will not give up. A restitution I will not make. Something God has already told me to do that I will not obey. It says, check these points and be honest. And, after checking the points and being honest, doing something about it to clear away that part that's blocking me off. And then it says, and then try listening again. So, again, for me, this is one of the most powerful, concentrated, it's just two or three pages, pieces of spiritual literature I've ever read. And it's an incredibly powerful tool when practiced. I've never known anyone that didn't start practicing this, that didn't start receiving some really powerful things and see changes in their life and inspiration and thoughts that they wrote down. And they knew that their mind didn't put that there, that they were inspired from some other source, which they identified as a higher power. So what I'd like to do, since this talked about medication, prayer, and self-examination, since I don't have any pills with me, what I'd like to do is practice some meditation right now. What I'm going to do is maybe take 3 or 4 or 5 minutes, and we can go into the silence and practice this right now. Like the technique you suggest in How to Listen to God, Perhaps if something comes, you can write it down. If you don't want to do that, that's fine too. But what I'm going to do is I'm going to read that part where it starts talking about getting into meditation. I'm then going to pause so that we can kind of be calm. And then I'm going to read an excerpt, that spiritual axiom excerpt, to bring into meditation as a suggested sort of thought to bring into meditation. And let's see what comes as we then take 3 or 4 minutes after that in the silence to just meditate right now and start the practice if we haven't, or to continue to practice if we've already done something like this. I don't want to suggest I'm not going to suggest a rigid way of doing this, but something that I try to do is to just sit in a comfortable position and relax. Close our eyes, perhaps. Very often that kind of brings us into ourselves, and when our eyes are open, we're looking at things outside of us. When our eyes are closed, we can still hear things outside of us, but it kind of shuts off one of those senses that can distract us. I've also heard, just keeping our feet not crossed and flat on the ground just kind of connects us with the ground. Just kind of get comfortable. Relax, just rest your hands calmly on your lap. I've been told that deep breaths release a natural muscle relaxant into our system. So why don't we take 3 or 4 very deep breaths? Not yet. Take 3 very deep breaths. Inhale as deeply as you possibly can to the point where it almost hurts. And then exhale as far as you can, almost to the point where it almost hurts, in a deep, extensive way. And do that 3 or 4 times. And then I'll bring us into this. So why don't we take 3 or 4 very deep diaphragmatic breaths. Try to just be here and now. Don't think about the day. Just try to relax and clear your mind. If a thought pops into your head, just matter-of-factly and emotionally observe it and watch it pass, as if a cloud going by in the sky. And then get back to your peace of mind. Feel your muscles relaxing in your back, and feel your butt sinking into your chair, your muscles relaxing, just being calm here and now. Not thinking about the past or the future. Notice your heartbeat or your breathing. Because again, that gets us out of our mind and is within ourselves. It's interesting how sometimes we can go whole days without noticing our heartbeat or our breathing. God to direct our thinking, especially asking that it be divorced from self-pity, dishonesty, or self-seeking motives. Please, Lord, direct our thinking. And now we're going to go into the silence with this thought. It is a spiritual axiom that every time we are disturbed, no matter what the cause, there is something wrong with us. That spark within us that is of God. I'd like to ask HP to please help us more and more know what His will for us, and to more and more have the power to carry it out. And when the time seems right, open your eyes. No time passed.
Time stopped.
Wait a minute, we got to continue.
Did we really do that?
Every single time I've ever gone into meditation, at the end I've always said, no, I don't want to come out. I've always had a sense of, no,
yeah.
I don't want to open my eyes. I got to tell you that the more I'm going to use we, because I think I do speak for Mike here. The more that we look at step 10 and 11, the more that's in there. I mean, it's amazing all that's in 10 and 11. I mean, it's been referred to as the strict disciplines of steps 10 and 11. I think it's interesting, too, that step 10 talks about continue, step 11 talks about seeking and improving, and step 12 talks about in all of our affairs. Our program leaves no room for complacency. Anything that is alive, and our spiritual life certainly is, and our relationship certainly is, and plants certainly are, and we as human beings certainly are, anything that is alive, it is either growing or it is dying. There is no coasting. There is no resting on our laurels. The only way you can coast is downhill. And for me, the whole program, but especially the last three steps, is sort of like walking up a down escalator. That I can get to the next level, but I have to keep moving. As soon as I slow down or as soon as I stop, it brings me right back down to where I came from. And that's been my experience in relationships. That's been my experience in spirituality. That's been my experience in sobriety. So, in working everything up to this point, it's amazing in seeing what more there is to then rocket us to the next level. And then in practicing this for a little while, it says in How It Works that none of us have been able to maintain anything like perfect adherence to these principles. That these are very wonderful ideals and these are very wonderful principles to be practicing. But as a human being, it's almost impossible to maintain growth in all of our affairs. So in practicing 10, 11, and 12 after doing all of our amends, eventually then going back through the steps is going through and doing that brings us to a certain level, but then in going through again it brings us to a further level. That for me, spirituality, God, this program and this process is an unlimited, uncapped kind of a thing. That no one has ever experienced all that spirituality has to offer, all that godly way of life has to offer, all that this program has to offer. That no matter how mediocre or bad it can be, we can bring it to a point where it's a whole lot better. No matter how great and wonderful and perfect and just beyond our wildest dreams it can be even better than that. And for me, that's the nature of my concept of a higher power, and the nature of spirituality is just an unlimited kind of a thing. And there's a whole lot in there. Mike said last week, sometimes just on a word or a sentence can be meditated on for 6 months and absolutely transform your life. So and even just that word pause, you can take that one word and meditate on it and try to bring it into your life. When agitated, doubtful, pause. Just keeping that in your mind for the next 6 months completely transform your life. Do you want to add anything to it?
Yeah, just two things. One thing I forgot to cover last week in the 10th step. If you look in the middle of page 85, it says, what we really have is a daily reprieve contingent on the maintenance of our spiritual condition. And we did touch upon the daily reprieve and the spiritual condition. But one of the things I didn't talk about is that word maintenance. And for whatever reason, I think people must catch hold of this word maintenance and say that steps 10 and 11 are the maintenance step. And my experience is that these two steps are anything but maintaining steps, because if I'm maintaining something, I'm keeping it the same. These two steps are about growth. So I believe what Bill and I like to call them is growth steps rather than maintenance steps.
Speak for yourself.
Okay, what I like to call them. The second thing is, on the top of page 86, it says that prayer and meditation works if we have the proper attitude and work at it. And for a long time, I wondered what they meant by the proper attitude. And a friend of mine one time pointed out exactly where in the big book it mentions the proper attitude. And if we go back to page 55 in We Agnostics, fourth paragraph, it says, we can only clear the ground a bit. And here it's going to give three things for the proper attitude. If our testimony helps, one, sweep away prejudice, two, enables you to think honestly, and three, encourages you to search diligently within yourself, then, if you wish, you can join us on the broad highway, capital B, capital H. It goes on to say, with this attitude, you cannot fail. The consciousness of your belief is sure to come to you. So, the three parts of the attitude are having an open mind to sweep away prejudice, having the willingness to think honestly, and also having the willingness to search diligently within yourself. That's all I want to mention.
One last thing, it talks about, or I'll let you guys. One other thing with where it says that we ask God to direct our thinking. A powerful way of doing that would be with this line. When going into the silence, in asking God to direct our thinking, it can be put this way. And the you that I'm referring to is higher power. What would you have me do? Where would you have me go? What would you have me say, and to whom? That's another way of saying God direct my thinking. It's asking God to direct us throughout our day. Where would you have me go? What would you have me do? What would you have me say, and to whom? And again, if we then go into the silence, what I found, and in anybody that's tried this, things start coming to us. Call mom. Return that money. Do that amends. Write your four step. Call Mike and ask him to sponsor you. And commit yourself under his cultish leadership. where would you have me? What would you have me do? Where would you have me go? What would you have me say, and to whom? This sort of the essence of asking, God to direct my thinking, as well as God to direct my day, and then specifics kind of start popping in. I just wanted to throw that one out because I almost forgot. I stole that one too.